You're listening to Supervision with a Vision, where we discuss all things supervision. I'm your host, Sarah, professional counselor, marriage and family therapist, play therapist, eating disorder specialist, and cookie lover, with my co-host, Heather, marriage and family therapist, certified Together in Texas counselor, a Texas transplant from California, and outdoor adventurer. Hi, welcome to Supervision with a Vision. Today, Heather and I are talking about quiet quitting and mental health. This week, we read What Quiet Quitting Says About Workplace Mental Health, published in Counseling Today, 2023. Heather, the first point the article makes or asks is, who's doing it? Who do you think is quiet quitting within the field of mental health?
I think probably we're seeing more clinic-based quiet quitting.
You think agency counselors
like agencies,
are quiet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that lots of things were expected of them during COVID and then integrating back into a situation, especially maybe with some of my supervisees that have been in multiple places.
You're saying COVID has caused more quiet quitting among agency clinicians.
Maybe.
Do you think... I don't know what my opinion would be. Do you think you would say that more agency clinicians quiet quit on a regular basis, regardless of COVID?
Maybe.
I don't know if I think it has anything to do with your setting.
Okay.
Because I think clinicians at all different kinds of settings can quit.
I think they can. But tell me more. Why do you think?
As I'm saying that, I'm thinking if you were in a private practice or a different kind of setting where you don't have a lot of people around you, you could quiet quit and you might not even know.
That could happen. You're right. All of a sudden you're like, oh.
Yeah. No one else is like reflecting it back to you in any way. There's not anybody else to like point that out to you either. In their words or just by what they're doing to point,
that's very true.
But and by yourself, you could just be quiet quitting and not even realize that you're just putting less energy or effort into what you're doing. So I can imagine that mental health clinicians or people working in mental health can quiet quit
anywhere. Yeah.
I think maybe the dynamics that I imagine result in quiet quitting are, feeling discouraged.
Right. I would agree with that.
And that when I say that, I think with counseling that can happen. I mean, if you're feeling discouraged and you work at, I don't know, a grocery store,
right.
You can still feel discouraged there. But I think to me, the work that we put into mental health feels really personal.
Yes.
And so then I think that you can feel discouraged on a deeper level or more easily,
right?
More quickly, maybe.
Well, because more exposure, right?
Yeah.
Every client that we're working with that comes in has the possibility for it not to go right. And I think that could lead to discourage.
Yeah. So maybe like agency, I think you can be discouraged as part of an agency because you don't feel like you have the autonomy that you would like.
Yeah.
Or you feel discouraged because there are limitations to... that the agency has for some reason, like maybe, whatever those, but I think that can happen. I have a friend, she has a private practice that I think she loves, but she does feel limited because the name of her private practice kind of implies that her private practice only works with kids.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, that is totally up to her. She has the autonomy to change that.
Right.
But to her, it feels limiting. And so I wonder if sometimes it feels discouraging to her.
I absolutely can see that.
I think it could happen so the limitations of where you are, but what if you're discouraged because the type of clients you see are challenging?
Right.
And so then it's discouraging because you don't always get instant feedback. Mm-hmm.
or positive feedback, or you don't, you maybe the type of client you have has a lot of recidivism and they just continue to have the problem. Those could all be discouraging things.
Yeah. I think it happens a lot in mental health that expectations change. Part of that's through the process of therapy. Mm-hmm. But I think also it could be in private practice or in any kind of setting, right? Any kind of clinic setting, hospital setting, whatever, is expectations either of your higher ups could be hard. Expectations of your clients could be hard.
Yeah.
Expectations of your supervisor, if we're talking about supervision. Sure. I mean, that could all be something that could be, if we're talking about discouraging feelings leading to quiet quitting.
I think that's a good example of COVID. Right. Like maybe you are, before COVID, you already felt pretty maxed out.
Right.
And sometimes discouraged. And then the world threw at you all the complications that COVID brought.
Right.
That everyone needed mental health support or that you needed to very quickly be virtual and you don't feel tech savvy or something. And so that's an added challenge that you just maybe felt unprepared for.
I definitely think that fits into the reason.
So to me, that feels very broad. That makes me think this is universal. Anybody could get to a point where they feel like they're quiet quitting.
Right. And I think as those expectations that either we put on ourselves or that are put on by others, like it almost, like you were saying, you may not know you're doing it. Like you may just be like, oh, I'm burnt out. Oh, I'm not happy. Oh, I'm, you know.
I think that's a whole nother aspect that we touched on, but you saying the expectations of others or even expectations of yourself. I think, I mean, for me, when I say that counseling is personal, the work that I do as a counselor is personal, it means I do have expectations that maybe others don't have, but I can be hard on myself or critical of myself because it's work that's important to me. So I want to do well. So that could be, So what if it's not because your agency is telling you something? It's not because your clients are telling you something. It's because you're telling yourself something that results in you feeling discouraged. Well, before we hit record, we were kind of talking about this in terms of burnout, and you and I both said that sometimes we, in mental health or in supervision, we might talk about burnout as though it's really bad, or that if it happens,
Right. Never going to be a good counselor,
right? But really, the way that you and I are talking about quiet quitting and what leads to it, you and I are saying, this is something you could flow in and out of.
Right. You could flow. And I definitely believe that. And I think with having that kind of like, I don't know, flexible boundary of what that is, I think that can bring you to a spot of being able to like, okay, so what do I need to change? Like, if it is my own expectation, right? What do I need to change to make either my work week better or the kind of client I take or how I do my interviews?
Well, that's... moving to the next point of our article, creating work boundaries or examining work boundaries. Specifically with your supervisees, how do you help them, or what examples do you have of helping your supervisees examine their work boundaries?
In particular, and I don't think she would mind me sharing this story, but I have one in particular that was taking all of her notes home on the weekend to complete them.
And because she felt too busy during the week.
Right, she felt too busy when she was at work to get them done.
Yeah.
Or she felt she would write them, but they weren't like thorough enough or good enough or whatever. And so it led to her spending like days just doing notes and then going back into work. And really, you can't do that for very long before you just feel...
But you know, that when I hear you describe that, I'm hearing her expectations led to her doing that, as well as the expectations that she felt at work that she needed to be really productive during the hours, during the business hours. So a double whammy.
Yeah, twofold. So I actually close every single session with her. We now have moved our supervision to Fridays. And we kind of have a little routine we do to make sure we have turned off our therapy hat for the week, and that we can go into our weekend ready.
I think trying to imagine how I could help someone. Maybe it's a problem. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe I just want them to reflect on good work boundaries. Maybe I would use, there's so many variations of this, but like, what do they call it? Like a wheel, okay. Your wheel of life. Mm-hmm. You know?
With all so the
it's
pieces,
like,
right?
Right. So it's like, it looks like a circle with lines, mm-hmm. like pieces of pie.
Right.
And you can put those, create your pieces of pie wherever you want to. But the idea is the whole thing is 100%. How much are you giving
to, right?
Right. To each area mm-hmm. of your life and helping them then also. So the example or the format that I have. You color in, so you create your piece of pie to show what percentage you're giving mm-hmm. to that. But then you also color in how much you wish you were giving.
Right.
So if you, this poor person who's just laboring right. over her notes, maybe she would say, you know, 25% of my whole world mm-hmm. is making sure those notes are really great. And you would then have them color in, well, what percentage would you actually like?
Right.
that to be and mm-hmm. and maybe it's like 5%,
right? It might okay. be the line.
Yeah, so whoa, we need right. And I think the visual helps them to see, well, that means you have 20% that you could give to something else. What other parts of your life that you represented in this really need more?
Yeah,
more. And maybe it's like, oh, if I had an extra 20%, I would 5% clean the house, mm-hmm. 15% hang out with the family,
right?
That would feel much better. And so then you can visually also imagine how it would feel or what your life would look like if you adjusted all those
I like them.
Percentages. That doesn't always put it into action, but at least it helps you to you start thinking right. about it and reflecting on it. But yeah, I think maybe the other way that I do this, and I wonder if you, I imagine you do this also, something that you do to help your supervisees look at their work boundaries is most often when it comes up.
Right.
Like there's an issue mm-hmm. that, or something like the notes that you're right. like made aware of, and then you can help them
figure out what's
look at it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think even maybe recently I had a supervisee, and I think that notes and other clerical things that they were doing that I said, that was a lot of time spent on that.
Right.
What did it feel like to spend that much time on that? How did it feel when it was done? Were you sad? Did it mm-hmm. feel like that was well spent? What if you had spent it on something different? What if you would use that for some mm-hmm. other purpose? Oh, I have a good example. And this was maybe my very early years of being a supervisor. I worked in an agency and would help train or onboard new counselors coming into the agency. And so many new counselors that I've worked with or known that know that part of their expectation is to lead groups.
Oh, yes.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
They want to spend just hours and hours planning for the group or making something or preparing right. something to use in the group.
It's very common.
And really, usually I can't even think of a time where I thought that was a good use of their time.
Especially with group, because you just never know how it's going to go.
Right. But sometimes in an agency where they offer groups, you know, who's going to be in the group, mm-hmm. how many people, you know, the dynamics of right. that group. But I don't think that's the norm.
Right.
I think the norm would be you're going to lead CBT group and you don't know who will attend that day,
right?
How many people, what their ages might be, mm-hmm. what their, and so if you plan so carefully and meticulously for a very specific group, and those people don't show up, or there's a different dynamic, or you start the group and realize
this is not what we need.
Yeah. Right. There's a big emotion that we need mm-hmm. to address. And how thrown are you if you've got this elaborate CBT plan and you just have to throw it out the window because it's not going to work mm-hmm. that maybe I'm thinking of a counselor that I was helping in a hospital setting, and they created so many little tiny construction paper shapes and cutouts,
right,
for a CBT group for latency kids, like, okay, 10 and under.
Okay.
And shoot, if, I mean, I don't know how long they spent. I think they even went to the store and bought supplies like, and spent hours cutting all these things out. And then when they showed up, every single kid under the age of 10 was either discharged or not available during that time. And so they had to adjust.
Right.
The, I mean, the whole group had, you know, the unit or right. the adjusted and went, okay, well, we don't need a CBT latency group right now. We actually need an adolescent group on this top, and went right. like, oh,
mm-hmm. all the, very easy, all the work,
everything. All the construction paper, right. all the, you know, and that not only you have to help yourself move past, oh, all my plans,
right.
but I also almost instantaneously need to figure out a new plan.
Right. In the moment, like right now.
Yeah.
And probably not using the construction paper.
Right. 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 Maybe not a fit for them. So I think, and if that, can you imagine if that happened over and over to you, how discouraging and frustrating? Mm-hmm. I think it, for me, I would feel discouraged with myself that, oh, this.
Why do I keep doing this? Right. Why do I keep planning and over planning? And
mm-hmm. Or just not feeling successful.
Right.
And that I would feel discouraged in being able to, like, that I wasn't meeting the need or the right. expectation. So, again, right. just like you described, like, twofold. But I see how that, the boundary, having good boundaries, flexible, mm-hmm. but also firm, lead to feeling less discouraged.
Right.
Or feeling like you've met the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully leading to fewer times where you feel like quiet quitting.
Right. True.
So in supervision specifically, we're talking about, or the examples we've given so far are about when people feel like this in their work. But what about, have you ever felt like quiet quitting on a supervisee? Or have you ever had a supervisee that was kind of quiet quitting in supervision?
I don't know that I've ever had one quiet quit in supervision.
That you know
that of. I know of. But that could have, you know, maybe I would be unaware of that.
Yes.
But I have had a supervisee before where I can remember thinking, like, how much longer are we going to do this dance? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, I am not a fit. And to, like, bring it up and be like, yeah, so you know what? You really are interested. You should go and pursue a supervisor with that specialty. And then we're still meeting for supervision for, mm-hmm. you know, because they're just either not doing it
mm-hmm.
or just like... Yeah. Oh, maybe I'm not available next week.
Like, yeah.
What's happening right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know of a situation. Hmm. But again,
I mean,
we know.
That,
we know?
I mean, what you said has me reflecting on my past supervisees and thinking, was that quiet quitting?
Like, was
that
it?
Quiet quitting? I can remember a couple that I really had to kind of like haggle and nag and...
Right.
you know, work on to get them to meet with me every week.
Yeah.
And I think that is a version of quiet quitting. If they really felt like they were getting a lot out of supervision or needed that support.
Right.
I don't think it would have been as hard to get them
exactly
to schedule and be on time or be there.
Right. Good point.
I struggle with this because I think, so where you and I are at there, like in the world,
mm-hmm.
Some people pay for supervision.
Right.
And some people get supervision through their work mm-hmm. and they don't have to pay directly for it. But you and I most often right. have supervisees that are paying us.
Yes.
I struggle with someone who's quiet quitting and we're kind of addressing mm-hmm. it. We're talking about maybe making a change or whatever that might be, either in the what supervision looks like or
right.
when supervision happens or considering a different supervisor. And I think I have a hard time with, they come back to me and realize that I'm a pretty good bang for your buck.
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to continue with me, even if it means quiet quitting.
Right.
Because
your rate
it's cost efficient.
Right. Yeah.
And I think I have a hard time knowing how and when to draw the line and say.
Yeah, I think so much of that could be unknown, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't necessarily see it.
Right. So maybe that's... right on to our last point, isn't it? How to make a change. So I think, you know, our article didn't exactly say it this way, but I think this is the counselor in both of us, that quiet quitting doesn't mean, well, moving on.
Right. It's not a death sentence.
It's right. It means it's time for a change. It's a sign or a symptom that something different needs to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, what if you do have a supervisee, or you even feel like this yourself, mm-hmm. being the supervisor? What kind of change is possible or needed if you realize someone's quiet quitting?
Well, I think first you address the things like you were just saying, like the practical things. When in the week are we meeting? Mm. Is that a conflict of a day? Is it already a hard day for you or for them? I mean, look at the basics, right? Mm-hmm. With my supervisee that I shared about earlier, we figured out pretty quickly in her new location that Fridays was very important for us to meet. Her day was lighter, but also she really needed that support in resetting for her weekend. And at first we were just going to do it like once or twice, and then it just fit her schedule better. And so mm-hmm. we kind of continued on with that schedule, like just, you know, kept meeting. But you do have to make some shifts in that, right? Like first you're looking at just scheduling. Uh-huh. Then if you're continuing on with change, you want to look at, okay, am I the right fit? Does this person actually yes. need something else? Because if they need something else, sometimes they just, I don't want to say need to shove out the door, but
right.
they need a like little, like it's okay to leave.
Right. And right. That's what I was going to say. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you or right. them.
Just
if it's not a right. fit, it's not a fit.
Right.
When I try and coach supervisees in that direction, that not all counselors are fit or a perfect fit or a good right. fit for all the different types of counseling.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, first semester of grad school, when they ask people, what's a population that right. you don't think you could work with? And everybody says, I could work with everybody.
Right. It's not true.
Yeah. Not if you're being honest.
Right.
That maybe just acknowledging that sometimes means moving on to the thing that is a better fit.
Right.
And that you'll be more successful at.
Right.
I'm thinking about, while you're talking, I was thinking, I think you're doing a great job of describing task ruptures and relationship ruptures.
Mm, yes. Those right? are very that, different.
So you're saying, okay, for in your mind, you would step one, look at, is there are you missing each other in your goal, the right. task rupture?
Right.
So are you like, huh, this is, you know, other than we aren't meeting at the right time of day for both of us. I'm hungry right. and you're trying to get out the door. That's not a good time for us. And if we could find a time where I'm not hungry and you're not trying to run out the door mm-hmm. to go pick up a kid or something, that we might actually have better supervision.
Right.
So addressing some logistics stuff, right. some task stuff, some getting on the same page about some things might make all the change that
right.
was
that needed. Might be it.
Yeah. And so you said, okay, look at the logistics stuff first, and then you would move on to
relationship
ruptures. Yep. Neither of which, I mean, by definition, it doesn't mean that they're not repairable.
Right.
So you could still work through both of right. those. So a relationship rupture, your description is maybe I'm just not the right fit. And that doesn't mean anything bad. It right. just means right. something
it just different. Means somebody needs something different or that mm-hmm. I need something different.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about a solution that is still kind of a task rupture solution, I think. Like maybe you're meeting in supervision and you think this is like a relationship thing that you could work on. And to address it, you start to make space or time for highlighting positive things.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that does some repair to right, the relationship, exactly. but it's also kind of a task thing.
Right.
Related, you know, a logistic thing right. or a goal thing that you could focus on that. But I do think that could happen within a supervision relationship. What if it's you? What if you're feeling that way? Would you examine those things for yourself and think, I feel like I'm quiet quitting on this person?
Right. Like, what am I doing? Why am I dreading this? That's uh-huh. usually a good sign uh-huh. if you're quiet quitting.
Yeah.
Why am I dreading this meeting? Why am I dreading, you know, doing this? And then looking at, like, is it, again, logistics, but is it also mm-hmm. because I don't think that I can give them what they need? Mm-hmm. Or is it because I think that they're not listening or they're just abrasive? Yeah. I mean, there could be all sorts of different things, yeah. right?
I think in all the examples that we've given too, and the way I'm thinking about it, the challenge is in following through on the change.
Right.
So right. you're saying, what if you're kind of acknowledging and they're kind of acknowledging that maybe you're not exactly the kind of supervisor that they're looking right. for, but you just kind of continue on. So the challenge or the push
is how to do it.
Right. Is to get yourself to do something different, which is, I mean, that's like pushing yourself out of the space where you're quiet quitting, that you could resolve yourself to go, well, I'm just going to do this because I'm just going to stay where I'm at right now.
Right.
Or you could say, I don't want to stay where I'm at right now.
Right. This doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe let's say in a positive way, that's why the supervision relationship is so important.
Right.
That you sometimes need, sometimes you can do it for yourself and sometimes you need someone else to say, right. Yep, we got to push ourselves out of this place so that we're not in a place where we're just quiet quitting anymore.
So be bold. Say what you need. Mm-hmm. Do all the therapy things.
I like that. Maybe we should end every episode with, okay, so be bold.
Go forward.
Yeah. Well, thanks today for listening to Supervision with a Vision. We would love to hear your ideas for episodes, as well as how you've supported your supervisees that feel like quiet quitting.